Welcome, everyone. I'm Reba Sparrow, and today we take sex to a whole new level on the Mystery Box Show podcast. Today's storyteller is an intimacy coach and has a story with a perspective that we don't really talk about that much, and that is the topic of sex being truly transcendent and otherworldly experiences and what that looks like for people. And I think it's worth hearing this kind of visibility, this voice, this story needs to be heard, I think, giving us just another perspective into what sex is and what it can be. Just a small content notification, there are many, many mentions of drugs and alcohol in this story. We at the Mystery Box Show advocate for everyone's health and safety, and we are definitely not advocating for dangerous, illegal, or unhealthy drugs or intoxications of any kind. With that being said, we just support the health and well-being of all people. And so does Anna Marti with her incredible story that we were really lucky to have on our stage, and luckier still that she is here to fill our ear holes with this incredible tale. Please welcome Anna Marti.
I'm an intimacy coach, which among other things mean that I get to talk about sex pretty much all the time. I even get paid to talk about sex. And because people speak to me, and even strangers once they find out what I do, I am acutely aware that most people do not experience sex as a portal for transcendence. I rarely hear about sex as this kind of ecstatic, dissolving communion and connection. I hear about a lot of obligatory sex, and I hear about good enough sex, crazy sex, rough sex, passionate sex, and I hear about a lot of bad sex. But not this dissolving thing. Altered states. You know what I'm talking about. We've all experienced them. In nature, at the top of a mountain, or sitting at the edge of the water, walking through the woods, listening to music, playing music, dancing, drugs. Time and space dissolve. It's like the edges of the body seem to disappear, diffuse. It's that crazy oneness thing. For me, it begins to feel like this sweet, cool rain that begins to expand through my veins, but it's also electric, which probably doesn't make sense. But that's how it feels. And I experience it through my body, through sex, through the erotic. I grew up with these really old German parents who never imagined that they'd need to talk to me about sex because I would find out when I got married, right? But this was Indianapolis in the 60s, by all measure, a cultural wasteland. But the rest of the country was waking up, heating up. New York to California, sex and drugs and rock and roll. Janis Joplin, Led Zeppelin, Timothy Leary. But before that, before the concept of erotic had even presented itself in my awareness. Today, I don't remember anything that happened, but I'm 7 or 8 years old, and I'm playing alone in my room, little second-story bedroom, with a neighbor boy. But I remember a feeling. There is no room. There is no me. There's only space and light and energy, and a feeling I've been chasing ever since. Oh, and I never was allowed to play with that neighbor boy again. orgasms. At 13 years old, again, I'd never heard of an orgasm, but I now know what the activity was, frottage, that friction of genitals rubbing against each other, fully clothed, with Larry Cohen in my parents' beige, bland TV room. But those were orgasms. But more than that, it was that field, it was that space. At 18, I ran away from home with a tall, blonde, long-haired musician who ran lights in New York City at the Fillmore East. And he initiates me into sex on drugs. My body never felt so alive. It was like a door opened that could mainline me into that experience. And that field kept pulling me through marriages and children. There was a period of time in my 40s when everything became sexualized for me. Drugs of choice at the time were cocaine and ecstasy, and getting high almost weekly seemed to generate this underlying sense of arousal, like an itch that constantly needed scratching. I'd masturbate in tanning beds. It was dark and warm and private. I'd undress everyone I saw, and I'd imagine having sex with all of them. My imagination was totally indiscriminate. That first line of coke was almost like an orgasm. It would flip some switch that had me wanting to do everything, connect with everything, have every part of my body penetrated. Go to strip clubs, those steamy petri dishes of erotic longing, and flirt with dancers. Or score more drugs, in and of itself, like some kind of dangerous sex, walking alone in the dark, in that electrified hunger that anyone on the street acknowledges. Drugs and alcohol seem to feed that hunger. Snorting coke off my lover's cock. And though I wasn't technically in an open relationship, when I was high, I wanted more. More bodies, more skin, more touch. The consequence of which was some crazy shit that would like happen in my bed or my house. It would start like this. Earlier in the evening, which is relative, probably about midnight, the cock coke snorting had not yet begun. I'd want to go out. And my friends, they knew they couldn't stop me. So we'd get dressed up, and we'd go to strip clubs, or we'd go dancing at gay bars, or we're out of drugs. And they knew they couldn't stop me, but they were afraid for me. So they'd come along and wait in the car. This one night, we're out of drugs again, and I convinced my husband at the time that we need to go out, and I'm wearing some ridiculously short black dress and heels, and we are at the Embers, the gay dance club, and the music is so 1992. I've got the power. By Snap. I have managed to get myself up on the catwalk again. And I am dancing and trying to seduce really straight women. And I'm drinking cocktails determined by alcohol content. I see a man. He's small and dark, and has this contained intensity. seemingly dancing by himself at the edge of the dance floor. Maybe this kind of oozing sensuality. But whatever our own personal hungers were, it drew us together. There also seemed to be something kind of soft and open in him. We dance, and I take him to meet my husband. We all dance together, and we tell him we're out of drugs. And he says, no problem. He's on parole, so he can't do any because he has to do mandatory random drug testing, which shouldn't have been a surprise. But what would we like? Heroin? Cocaine? Yes? Yes? The deal happens quickly on the street, and we're headed home, our new friend in tow. We're doing drugs. He's not. And we're listening to this CD over and over and over again. Migration by Peter Kater and Carlos Nakai. I can still hear it, this deep kind of soulful cello and flute. My husband loved heroin, so he was happy to be lost in that. And Ludwig and I, that was our stranger's name, went to the bedroom. And I don't know if it was a prison thing. But he wanted to fuck my ass. And he did. And maybe it was the drugs. But it was like being fucked open to God. By God. Eventually, my husband came in. He was always so respectful under the circumstances. And he said he was feeling a little uncomfortable. Did Ludwig leave? Did we all go to sleep? I don't recall. I do remember imagining that he was some kind of normal person that was going to call the next day. He'd meet the family, we'd have dinner, maybe get high again. But the only thing that was real was what had transpired. I had had unprotected anal sex with a felon IV drug user I had picked up at the Embers. And I was strangely in love. He didn't immediately call. He showed up weeks later, wanted to borrow my car, and disappeared for 24 hours. He got arrested again and again. That erotic space was never revisited. Rather, he became the disenfranchised family member we felt compelled to care for. It seems as if he had no one else. The last time I heard from him, he called again from prison, wanted to know if he'd come stay with us when he was released. But by then, my life had changed. I'd also been volunteering through the Department of Corrections and had a much more sober view of who he was, of what I could provide. I was no longer in love. That had faded years ago. I miss that. I miss wearing crazy, sexy shit and getting so high, yet being so clear that I always got to be the designated driver. I miss picking up strangers and having my ass fucked and snorting coke off of someone's cock. Sometimes I wonder if I have used up my share of mind-blowing, body-exploding, electric rain entrance into that dissolving field. Or that I've used up your share as well? I'd like to think not. I meditate now. I don't do drugs. In case you haven't heard, they're not sustainable. I've got myself on a couple of dating portals, but partners that are interested in that kind of transcendent communion, they're in short supply. I speak to men and women daily, hopefully helping them relax their tensions so they can have just a small taste of what I know is possible. I miss that embodied transcendence. But here's what I think. I think the erotic was a portal for me, but the field is much bigger than that. The field includes all of reality, music and dance and sex and drugs and art and joy and bliss and grief and fear and birth and death. I'd like each of us to discover our own really unique and distinctive door into that field so that we, all of us, can experience the reality, particularly in these times, of our profound communion and connection.
That was Anna Marti. I love what she said there at the end, that she felt like sex was her gateway, her portal to the transcendent, but that it is really everywhere. And for me, that means, what do we resonate with? What does our intuition tell us? What are our passions, and do we follow them? Because when I do, that's when I feel most transcendent, most alive. And, you know, I'm not a doctor or like a scientist, but I think that the reason that drugs can be a portal that way for so many people is because they take away inhibitions and they take away resistance, so to speak. And when we're in a state of allowance, that's when we can really resonate with our inner beings, with our truest selves. And I think that that's why they're often used as a tool to get there. And I think that really great sex and being present there is letting go of resistance. And we're really allowing ourselves to show up in our truest form. Whatever your passion is, when you're fully engaged with that, you know that feeling, like how she was talking about in the beginning. You felt it before when you're out in nature, experiencing, you know, at the top of a mountain, experiencing something really magical that we're really resonating with. I highly encourage you to check out Anna's work. You can find her at her website, annamarti.com, and you can check out her interview there that she recently did called Virtual Intimacy, not as creepy as it sounds. We'll have all of those links for you in the show notes, and let us know what you thought about Anna's story. You can get in touch with us on Facebook, Instagram, or email. All of the links are at mysteryboxshow.com. Our next live stream is happening on February 14th for our special Valentine's Day, folks. This is by far my favorite show of the year. So much fun. We've got sexy stories to enjoy with your special Valentine, or I am always an option. I am always there to be your Valentine on Valentine's Day. Tickets are available right now on our website, mysteryboxshow.com, and we'll have all of those links in the show notes for you as well. If you'd like to support us, please subscribe to this podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. It really helps us out. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/mysteryboxshow, where you can interact with us on an even more personal and intimate basis, plus get early access to all of our podcast episodes and YouTube videos for as little as $5 a month. Our music comes from our good friend Farnell Newton and the Other Ship Connection. Our audio engineer is Greg Keenan at Sound Minion Studios in Longmont, Colorado. Thank Thanks to our production assistant, Nicole Perkins, my co-producer, Eric Scheuer. I'm your mistress of ceremonies, Reba Sparrow. On our next episode, a dom finds himself in a sticky situation.
And I'm steadily increasing the intensity of how I'm hitting and where I'm hitting. And I'm actually surprised at how much pain he can take. And he's a total pain slut. And he's facing the wall, so I walk up from behind. And I put my arm around him. And as soon as I do, I go, Jay, are you okay? And he goes, and he collapses.
Tune in next time on the Mystery Box Show podcast.